Okay, I just want to begin with three quick thank yous. Number one, thank you very much to all of you guys for taking time. I know a lot of people have midterms, so thank you so much, everyone, for coming. To the CJF and the Torah Leadership Network, and the Alpi Darko Society, especially Ilan Davidovitz, the co-founder and president, and my good friend, for helping put this event together. And most importantly, a very special thank you to our three panelists, Rabbi Kamenetsky, Rabbi Hagler, and Rabbi Yehuda Rothner, who came all the way here. It's a schlep for a lot of them, and took time on a very busy Sunday afternoon. So thank you so much to all of them. Before we start, I just want to give a quick introduction to what exactly our goal is here tonight, what we're trying to accomplish. Everyone here knows that there is obviously a great need for excellent educators in our communities. What's not obvious, though, is whether or not any given particular individual should or should not become a professional Jewish educator. So our hope tonight is that with this panel of individuals, that people who come from different backgrounds, different geographical experiences, different educational philosophies, and different age groups that they've worked with, hopefully they'll give a very broad picture of what the world of education is all about. One thing, we're going to ask to hold all questions that you may have until the end, because we have questions people have submitted throughout the last couple of weeks. So hopefully we'll get to all those, and then if there's time for questions at the end, we'll ask. And that is that. So let's begin with, if we can have introductions, just quick introductions of their careers in education. Rabbi Kamenetsky, if you could start.
Hey, thank you very much. I'll say at the outset, it's a pleasure to be here. Back in my alma mater, and it's a pleasure to see so many bright young faces interested in the field of Jewish education. Whatever I say tonight, I can't speak on behalf of my other panelists, but whatever I say, I hope that all of you will be inspired to have a positive view of this most important career opportunity. I have a little bit of a different path that I took to Jewish education than most, because my grandfather was someone who started many yeshivas, day schools throughout the country. He was very, very involved in the Torah Masorah for 50 years. He was involved in starting hundreds of day schools, and my father followed him, was a principal for many years in my house. Being a principal was really breakfast, lunch, and supper. That's all anybody ever really spoke about. I'm looking around the crowd. I see some other people who are a little bit in the same boat as me. But the truth is, I was never necessarily committed to a field in Jewish education. In high school, I was very involved in NCSY. I was always very involved in camps. I think being involved in camps and being involved in youth groups are a great, in my opinion, are a great stepping stone towards getting involved in Chinuch. And then I got my big break after being in the Gruss Kollel. I was in YU for a number of years in the YU's Kollel, and then my big break was I got a job in MTA as a Rebbe in MTA, and I was there for a few years, and then I got maybe an even bigger break. It depends how you look at it, but they were looking to start a new high school, and they asked me to come after being a Rebbe in MTA for 5 years. I got a call to be the founding principal of a boys' high school out in Long Island called DRS. And I've been there for 15 years. So it's been, throughout that time also, I've been very involved in camps. I was originally in Camp Maganav for about 20 years. I don't know if anybody here has ever heard of that, but it was really an outstanding camp, actually. Then Misora for a couple of years, and then for the last 17 years, also been the educational director of the NCSY Summer Kollel in Israel. So camps, school, that's basically the quick summary of my career.
Great. First of all, I echo the words of Rabbi Kamenetsky. It's really so wonderful to see everybody here, and it makes us feel great that there's a wonderful future for Jewish education. I'll tell a little bit about my story as well, because I think it is kind of answers some of the questions that I think that you guys were looking to hear. I did not grow up in a family of educators. I really grew up with no desire to go into education. I can't say no desire. I never really thought about it. It wasn't something that just kind of that I thought about. But what I did grow up doing all the time was being involved with kids. Really from a young age. I was the guy in the shul that was running the youth groups, taking it over and running that really from that young age. As soon as, you know, I was old enough to do anything in camp, I was doing that. After a year, I became a division head, you know, that type of thing. So I knew that I was really very, enjoyed working with kids. I was very good at it. I had the aptitude for it, and it really was something that was very satisfying for me. And I think that the kids that I was working with as well felt the same way. So again, really in the youth departments and in working with kids in a camp setting. I did go to Israel for the year and started to become a little bit more interested in learning. Then probably somewhere in my second year in learning in Israel, and it wasn't that popular back then to go for a Shana Bet year, is where trying to potentially fuse those two things together started to perk a little bit as a possibility, but quite frankly, it really wasn't something that I really thought that I was going to do. But staying involved with kids was very much a part of me. So I went back to camp. I was division head in Morashah the summer after I can't remember if it was my Shana Aleph or Shana Bet summer. And Rabbi Danny Ryan, I think that was in Gush, was the head of the educational staff there. And I don't know this for sure, but I kind of have this feeling like he pegged me that I need to go into chinuch and got me involved and started to get me. He said, you know, somebody's not there today. Can you give the share? You know, there's someone. And then by the second week of camp, he said, you know, there's one open slot. I'd love for you to take that one slot once a day. And that really started the ball rolling and getting me much more interested in it. And then eventually I did move in that direction. I guess in terms of breaks, I started my career teaching at an SAR. Just an interesting story with regard to that. So again, somewhere in that interim, while I was also in Smicha, I became the youth director at Lincoln Square Synagogue. I was running Yeshiva High School seminars, running camp programs, running Yacha programs, you know, pretty much all of those things that keep you up 24/7. Then when I got my offer, then I was looking to go into Chinuch, when I finished Smicha and looking to go in full-time into Chinuch, I got several, Baruch Hashem, but two really offers that I was considering. One was in a high school to teach about five periods a day and to become their student activities director. That wasn't such a, also then even then, wasn't that many schools that have full-time student activities directors, so this was, I think, a little bit progressive of a school. And one was just to go to SAR and to teach full-time over there. My initial instinct was to take the high school job, one, primarily because most of the youth work that I was doing, not exclusively, but a lot of it was with high school students. But number two, I knew I could do the student activities. I had been doing that, you know, for the last 3-4 years before that in my youth work and camps. You know, running programs was easy for me to do. But I got some great advice and said, you know, you've got to make a decision. You can always come back to that, but do you want to become a good teacher? Is that something you're really committed to doing? So I put that aside and really just went into teaching and made that decision at that point that I was going to just commit myself to becoming a very, very, I knew I was good with kids. I didn't know if I could teach. And that's when I went to SAR. Of course, 2 years after that, they decided they needed a student activities person. So I moved into that position there as well. Then just to fast forward, I was there for 5 years. One other important, am I out of time on this? Yeah, because I think this is important. I'm sorry, but I think it tells a little bit of a story. After my second year, somewhere in the middle of my second year at SAR, I was offered an assistant principal position in a very large day school in the New York area. And it was very tempting. It was really tempting to take that. But again, I got some very good advice and said, just stay the course, you know. Stay the course, take it one step at a time. From there, I went to the Hebrew Academy in Montreal. After 5 years, became the assistant principal there. From there, I became the headmaster of the Ramaz Lower School, and then was offered the opportunity to start a new day school in the Bergen County area, Yeshivat Noam, which I've been with for the last 11 years.
My story, I guess, begins a little bit differently. When I was a madrich in Bnei Akiva in 8th grade, at about that time in life, I had already decided that I was going to be a mechanech. I finished high school in Cleveland. I went to Gush for 2 years. And then I made a decision, as opposed to this being my alma mater was Case Western Reserve University, because I felt that everybody, all of my friends, had decided to make aliyah to New York and left the small towns behind, and there was nobody really to teach there. And I had a long discussion with Rav Lichtenstein as to whether or not I should be going back to Cleveland, and I decided to go back to Cleveland. Obviously, I was accepted here to YU. But I went back to Cleveland because I felt, I was accepted here, and it was a big choice, whether or not to be here, where you have a chance to really learn full-time as well as go to university and try to synthesize those two worlds, or to go back and feel that you have a shlichut to give in a smaller town. And I decided to go back to Cleveland, and I spent 4 years at Case, and I majored in something a little bit different. It was an ancient studies major with a concentration in archaeology and ancient Greek. And then I went on for a master's in education, where I taught public school also. So that was really my beginning. And while I was actually at Case, I taught about 60 hours a week in all of the afternoon schools, the Sunday schools. I was the principal of the Sunday school, et cetera, in Cleveland. At that point, after I taught public school, I was offered a job by Fuchs Mizrahi School, then Beit Sefer Mizrahi, and I taught in the middle school and the high school for 2 years before I made Aliyah. And in 1994, I went back home, actually to go back to Gush for 6 years to learn in the Kollel there. In Alon Shvut. During that time, I was asked to be the director of Machane Stone in 1996-97, of which I began going back. In the year 2000, Fuchs Mizrahi School offered me a principalship. They wanted me to come back, and so I took over the principalship of the middle school, in which we did a lot of very interesting things in melding a number of the worlds, which are called experiential and formal education, which we pioneered at Fuchs Mizrahi School. And after my stint there as the principal, I moved back to Eretz Yisrael then with 6 children and my wife, Adina. And I taught in the middle school, Yeshivat Nachshon, for 3 years in Eretz Yisrael. And then I continued to be the director of Camp Stone till today. So that's a little bit about my history and my story.
Thank you very much. We'll begin immediately with the first question. What are the most challenging aspects of being a mechanech, and specifically in your particular role, Rabbi Kamenetsky, as now of a boys' yeshiva high school, Rabbi Hagler as an elementary day school principal, Rabbi Yehuda as an experiential camp educator? And what were some effective ways you countered those challenges? Rabbi Kamenetsky.
I think that the most challenging aspect of being a mechanech in today's day and age, at least in the high school, is that society presents to kids a lot of excitement that either flies in the face of, or certainly at best provides a very, very strong challenge to our kids' Jewish identities and overall commitment. To me, that's the biggest challenge. And what we have to do to combat that challenge is to present Torah learning and to present Yiddishkeit in an equally exciting and positive way. And I think that if the mechanech himself is someone who is infused with a sense of excitement about his own Judaism, and someone who's really excited about his own learning, and really exudes that, and you can tell from every moment that the person is standing in the classroom that he's totally consumed with excitement and love and energy for what he's doing. So that goes away. It spends some of the way towards addressing that issue. Now, I don't think you really want to hear, I just wasn't sure about the question, about specifically my particular as principal. I don't think you really want to hear about all my challenges of being a principal. I just don't think we're up to that. We also don't have enough hours, I don't think, in the program for me to describe to you exactly what the life of a principal is in every day. If you want me to deal with that, I can, but I just don't see that it's going to be a valuable usage of everyone's time. But in terms of a mechanech, I think that that I think is the biggest challenge. I mean, just one side point related to that, nowadays particularly, I think that technology, while providing some very positive dimensions to education, I think also provide educators nowadays with particular challenges. I think kids' attention spans are shorter, so it's harder to engage sometimes. I think that to develop meaningful relationships with kids is more challenging in a technological age where what a relationship means is being compromised a little bit with Facebook and other things. So I think that technology also provides a big challenge. And again, there, you got to meet the kids with the technology, but at the same time, try to explain to kids, you know, that there's a time for disconnecting and there's a time for interacting interpersonally and a time for them to delve deeply into things. And Judaism sometimes requires that deep engagement, which sometimes the quick fix of Google or Twitter or some of those things doesn't necessarily provide the forum for really deep, meaningful thought about religion.
Thank you, Rabbi.
If I'm going to follow Rabbi Kamenetsky, I said this each time, I certainly concur with everything that he said, but I want to really just emphasize that point, because really the points that he made apply to elementary school as well. So I'm going to focus a little bit differently so as not to be repetitive. I think the biggest challenge in teaching, especially in an elementary school, is learning how to meet the different needs and the different learning styles of the students in your classroom. Please remember that elementary schools by nature are community schools. So we're taking whole families, and there are different types of children that are going to be in your classroom. There are, you know, children with attention deficit disorders, with a attention deficit and hyperactivity disorders, children that are on different spectrums, whether it be on a PDD spectrum, Asperger's spectrum, with emotional issues, anxiety issues that are showing in elementary school children on such a young age, and how that's impacting on their availability to learn. Children with different, various types of learning disabilities, dyslexia, language-based learning disabilities, reading-based learning disabilities. You have the visual learners in the class, the auditory learners in the classroom. So I think the biggest challenge is get out there and learn how to differentiate, and how do I meet the different needs of the different students in my classroom. Because you're going to be given a classroom, I guarantee you this in the elementary school, that has, if not every one of the learners that I just described in it, if you're going to do this job for 3 or 4 years, within that amount of time, you're going to hit all of those learners, and it's your responsibility. Hopefully, the good schools will support you in doing that and not leave you alone. But ultimately, it's your responsibility to learn how to meet the needs of those children. I'll throw in one more thing. Communication is huge in the elementary school, in the elementary school realm right now. You need to have, obviously, with your students, you have to have a lot of communication with parents. I mean, I started in elementary school maybe 20-something years ago, and my teachers right now communicate with parents more in a month than I did in an entire year when we first started. I think part of that is because of the technology that we're living in. A lot of that can be done through some of the through emails and something like that. Communication with outside tutors, therapists, support people, communication with internal support people. So being able to have a lot of time to communicate and figuring out how to do that is important as well.
Thank you, Rabbi Rothman.
I would agree with Rabbi Hagler. I think that that's very insightful. I think that to try to figure out how to differentiate in the classroom and at Machaneh, at camp, is crucial, and it's a huge challenge. I think you're asking me as a Machaneh. I think part of the challenge is to always stay fresh and to grow and battle against your own personal ignorance. I find that finding the time to learn and to grow in order to be able to provide greater enrichment to your students in the classroom and in Machaneh, and especially not just to students, but to all of you. In other words, my job at Machaneh is not just, it's actually like a 60-40. I believe it's only 40% that I'm dealing with the Chanichim and Chanichot of Machaneh, and 60% of my job is with you sitting here in front of me. In other words, the college and the post-college group who are actually working at Machaneh, because my job is to also inspire you to do other things and for you to grow. So keeping myself fresh and being able to do that is particularly challenging. I find it also challenging in terms of time to make sure that I have enough time to give everybody, especially my own family, and to grow with my own children and to provide for them, especially when you're providing for others. That's a difficult job to do. And I would say lastly, the challenge I think of today is not only in terms of what technology gives us in those challenges, but it's also trying to ideologically motivate young people, yourselves included. There's a lot of cynicism that goes on. There's a lot of assumed hubris that goes on, that we know it all and we've done this and this is just, we're doing it again and again, and to try to inspire ideologically for you to grow, not just religiously, is a huge challenge in Machaneh.
Thank you. We'll begin with Rabbi Rothner this time. What are the most fulfilling aspects of the above, of the last question?
I think one of the most fulfilling aspects that I have in my job is not only in terms of, again, the chanichim, the campers at Machaneh, but I was just in Masada Kiddushin for Pastor Rosh Mosheva from Machaneh, and Kiva Rabinsky, who works here also at the Center for the Jewish Future, and to walk into the wedding and to be a Mesader Kiddushin, and then to see, you know, 12, 14 tables, 12 or 14 past seven members, Banim and Banot at the tables, all who have decided, number one, to make Aliyah and to go back home, number one, and number two, most of whom have decided to take paths in Jewish education and be involved in helping create our Am in Eretz Yisrael is an extremely fulfilling part of what I do.
Thank you. Rabbi Hagler?
And I think it's important to point that in the elementary school, the fulfillment is more immediate, if you will, although I feel like we're the ones planting the most seeds. You're not going to have that longer-term type of relationship. It's going to be unusual for an elementary school Rebbe to be asked to be a Sadeh Kiddushin at the wedding of one of their Talmidim. But at the same time, you get tremendous amount of fulfillment throughout the course of the year, especially when I talk about the different, in the last question I spoke about the various types of learners and the difficulties and the struggles that students are working with. You see it literally right there. You don't have to wait. You're going to see the difference if you're effective and, as I said, getting the right support, and we could talk about how do you find the right support, but if you're in that right environment and you're reaching children, if you're working in the elementary school level in across the board, and especially in middle school, you're going to see the difference in the students from beginning of the year to middle of the year to the end of the year, and especially if you're in a middle school type of environment where you might see them for two or three years, you can really see that tremendous growth in them, both in their growth and academically, their growth and maturity. You're really making a difference in them becoming independent young adults, preteens and early teen age, which is really the time that you want to work with them to give them that. And the final piece is you're giving them tremendous student skills. You really can look back on your experiences, what you didn't have, and be able to impart that to them. How do they study for a test? How do they take notes? Those type of things, which I think are great to give at that age, and you get the fulfillment there.
Thank you, Rabbi Kamenetsky.
I would bet that most of you have probably heard of the name Shmuley Boteach. You heard of that name? So on the internet about a few weeks ago, he wrote an article which a number of other people picked up on, and he said that he feels like the biggest problem in the rabbinate, one of the biggest problems with rabbis in general, is that rabbis, educators, people don't say thank you to them. That's what he thinks is like the biggest, reason for burnout. That's what he wrote the article. That's what he felt was the biggest reason for burnout. So a few people were commenting about it on the internet, and my honest take on that, it's true that most of the times when you sink your kohos into kids, families, most of the time, much of the time, it goes undervalued. It'll often go undervalued. But the truth is that I really don't believe that a mechanech should be in the business of chinuch for his own personal fulfillment. Obviously, everybody needs fulfillment in the job that they're doing. You can't do a job if you don't feel accomplished, if you don't feel like you're doing something. No question about it. But honestly, I am, the reason why the fulfillment that I get is knowing that I have the tremendous merit of, doing God's work all day. And my fulfillment comes from my own personal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that I feel like God wants, his kids to be frum. He wants his kids to learn Torah. He wants his kids to get a good education. He wants the world to do that. If I have the merit of playing a small role in that, as opposed to, making money for somebody else and on the stock market or something like that, So I feel very, very fulfilled with that. Whether the people decide to recognize it and say thank you, or the people don't decide to recognize and say thank you. If they say thank you, ma tova, ma na'im, you even feel even better about it. If the kid asks you to be Masada Kiddush in his wedding, so they really felt that karas hatov, that's icing on the cake. But the truth is, the most fulfillment that I get is being able to see a kid who struggled. Like Rabbi Hagler was saying before, to see a kid who in 10th grade tells me, I want to go to public school, I'm not interested in yeshiva. Kid who in 10th grade, a kid who confides to his therapist in 10th grade that he wants to commit suicide, and or all the kids, and many, many kids that you're in a position to really, this is a very famous educator, actually a psychologist, Dr. Chaim Jinnat, I forgot how to pronounce his name, Rabbi Hagel will probably know better than me. He says that the teacher creates the whole mood in the classroom. The teacher decides whether the kid's going to have a bright day or the kid's going to have a rainy day. And, he says, I've come to the frightening conclusion, one of the most famous quotes about it, a teacher, I've come to the frightening conclusion that I decide the whole mood of the kid. You can decide to be an agent of torture, I'm sure you all had teachers who were agents of torture, or you walk in and the sun is shining in the room and you feel like it's bright sunshine. So to know that you have the ability to bring that kind of a day, that kind of experience, and to present Judaism in the kind of way to have a kid be inspired and to grow and to want to accomplish, to me there's no money that could pay that price, and there's no fulfillment that's worth more than that.
Moving towards a more practical type of question, we're going to combine questions 3 and 4 because they're pretty similar. How can one tell if Chinuch is or is not correct for him? And what advice can you give to aspiring young educators in undergraduate or in smicha for how to A, find a job or get a job, and B, to be effective in that position once they do land that job, in terms of skills and also in terms of graduate degrees, be it in education, Judaic studies, social work, psychology, etc. We'll start Rebecca Hagler, then Rebecca Kamenetsky, then Yehuda. We'll mix it up a little.
Okay, great. I think first of all, just to tell if you, if chinuch is right for you, is do you enjoy being with children? Do you really enjoy interacting with them, being a part of their life, impacting their life, hearing their stories, seeing what's interesting to them? If you love to learn and you're a tremendous Talmud Chacham, but you really don't like being with children, I'd probably suggest you not send me your resume someday. But really, most importantly, it's that. In terms of seeing if that's right for you and experience, I'll combine those two questions together. I think it's important, Rabbi Kamenetsky was touching on this in his introduction, to have experiences where you're working with children. The informal experiences are very, very important, and pieces that you can bring into the more formal atmosphere of the classroom, and knowing where your enjoyment is and where your pleasure is, and where those people are. I'll just do one more piece in terms of being effective. I really want to think about as you're going into chinuch, think about your strengths and weaknesses, and don't be so tempted to do what looks very very attractive, meaning don't only think that the only place you could teach is a top level 12th grade shiur, and if you're not teaching, on that level and going through the things that your rebbeim over the last 4 or 5 years in Kola were able to give to you, that you're not really having an effective and experience as an educator. You might grow more and become a better educator if you rethink and shift those aspirations a little bit, and go to places where you can learn to teach. Remember, just because you're a Talmud Chacham, you probably know almost nothing about teaching. And please God, you'll go to great graduate schools and get a wonderful degree, and then you'll know a little bit. So try to put yourself in a position where you're going to learn how to teach. In the right school, the right age group, the right support system is the place that you're going to offer you mentoring. Are they going to overload you, right away and just burn you out? Are they going to put you in the right position where you can afford to grow and learn how to grow? So I think those are important pieces.
Okay. what skills, talents, and experiences does it take to be a good mechanic? So I think that number one, you have to know something. You do have to know something. Number two, I think one of the most important skills for being a good teacher is someone who has charisma and self-confidence. Much more self-confidence than charisma. Just, you have to have a presence. At least my experience has been that someone's got to walk into the classroom, and again, this is something that you can develop. It's not something that you have to be born with, although some people are born with it. But there has to be a sense of presence. I think that there has to be a sense of self-confidence. The third thing is that you have to know how to present ideas clearly and understandably and in an organized and exciting fashion. You have to be someone who kids are going to want to listen to you. You're going to have to, as Rabbi Hagler said, to learn how to present things in an exciting form. I think also you have to have a bucket load of patience. I think that that's one of the most important qualities. If you know yourself that you're not a patient person, that you have no patience for things, no tolerance for things. I can tell along the lines where I have this before about the instant gratification. My father, over the summer, my father's a camp director for 30 years, many years. And so one time the 6-year-old kids in camp always thought, what does Rabbi Kamenetsky do? My father, he picks up the papers on the ball fields. When there's papers, they ask him, what does he do? He's the guy who picks up the papers. He's the director of the camp, but he's the guy. So first of all, he's the only guy that really cared, right? The director's the only guy who really cares that the ball fields have the papers on them. So that once they asked him, why do you go around doing this? He says, all year long, I'm a principal and of an elementary school. I'm always planting seeds. I never get to see the end of what I do. What's going to happen from this kid who I put all the cocos into? Here, it's a baseball field. There's papers on it. I pick it up, and it's clean. It's fantastic. I get the instant gratification. So you have to have a lot of patience. And chinuch, you have to have a long view. And Rabbi Hagler said, in elementary school, you'll get it at the end of the year. Of course, there'll be some that you get at the end of the year, but there'll be a lot of kids who you won't win with. You know, there'll be kids who you'll put the most amount of efforts and energies in, and you think you didn't win until 5 or 10 or 15 years later when the kid comes back to you and says, you know what, I didn't like your class when I was in it, but I learned more in your class than I did in the other, you know, 2-3. I'm sure you've had some experience like that at all. Now, how can you tell if chinuch is right or not right for you? So first of all, I actually, you know, gave a talk about this. It's on YouTube. You can listen to it if you want to. That's under the Hashkafa Shmuzes. But one of the things is that I think you do have to be someone who can live on less money. I think that you know, the chinuch world does not pay as well as the corporate world, and you have to, if you grew up with a lot of money, then you have to know that you can live on less money. I said before, you have to have a ton of patience. I think you have to have a burning desire to be mashpia. I echo what Rabbi Hagler said times 10. Do not go into chinuch because you want to learn, because you want to just stay in learning. Gemara says that Hashem cries 3 tears every day. One tear is for people who should have gone into chinuch and who don't go into chinuch, and one tear is for the people who went into chinuch who shouldn't be in chinuch. And unfortunately, there are many people who went into chinuch and should not be in that profession because either they don't have the patience or they just want to learn. In terms of getting experience, just to echo what Rabbi Hagler said, I think that one of the things that could hurt you in terms of chinuch is sometimes people say, well, after college, I want to just, like, you know, learn for a bunch of years, learn for, I don't know, 5-7 years, and then say, here I am, chinuch world, I'm ready to be mashpi on the world. I've seen so many people like that who say, you want to take a few years off if they're married, just learn for a while. To my mind, that's a mistake if you want to stay connected to the world of chinuch. You got to, as soon as you possibly can, already, again, it doesn't have to be full time, but you know, to get some experience, to do something over the summer. I can tell you, I've been involved in NCSY Kol, at least 4 madrichim on the Kol. After I just watched what they did with the kids over the summer, I said to them, when you're ready to go into chinuch, give me a call, because you know, you could just see that a person had the experiences, he gets involved in it, that whether he can do it or not. So definitely get the experience. Graduate degree in education, by the way, and I think that 15-20 years ago, in my opinion, it was almost worthless. But I think that nowadays, I think the graduate schools are doing a much better job. I think that here at YU and other places, I think the graduate schools are doing a good job of you know, it depends. We got to know which courses to take and which are a complete waste of time. But some of them, some of them, I think, do a nice job of helping a person prepare for the actual classroom experiences. I have a lot more to say, but that'll sum it up for now.
I echo a lot of what has been already said by my colleagues. I think patience is crucial. I think knowing how to listen is crucial. I guess as an addenda to what Rabbi Kamenetsky says, and a little bit of a different twist, it's presence is critical, I think, in a classroom, but not only knowing how to present the material in a very easily understandable way, but also part of our job as mechanchim is to challenge our students. So also to present material in a way that is going to force them to learn how to think, and to think in ways that they might not have thought before. And that's a critical part of being a mechanech. It's not simply there to help express what has already been expressed, but would also ein beit midrash below chidush, and for them to learn how to begin expressing new things, and almost to a degree to put them in an educational crisis where they have to grow and where they have to think along new lines. I think seeing a child as potential and not as actual is a very, very important part of what we do as mechanchim. I would also say the idea of picking up paper on the ball field, our job is not only to be the ones that are picking it up, as people in Machane know, but also in order to teach everybody else how to pick up paper on a ball field is critical. So again, giving it over and making sure that they're able to understand why it's important to do that kind of thing. In terms of the issue of money, I would agree that you also... that money is not the end all, but I think as a mechanech, that's part of your ideological construct in that you have a clear understanding of needs and wants. In other words, what do you really need? And being mistapek b'mu'at is not something which puts you in crisis, but it is an emanation of who you are as a mechanech. And that is also part of what you're trying to teach your students and what you're trying to teach those around you. Then a mechanech is not always looking for something more or what he can't have or she can't have. It's about who they are and understanding the relationship between, you know, hamarbe v'hamamit.
Thank you. You are all parents and members of your respective communities. Can you please discuss if and how your position as an educator has impacted your social life, whether positive or negative? We'll begin with Rabbi Hagler, go to Rabbi Rothner, and then Rabbi Kamenetsky.
Okay. I mean, it's not, you know, you certainly can live in one community and teach in another community. It's not something that I have done. I've always, except for 2 years of my career, I've always lived in the community that I've that I've been teaching in or been the principal in. It definitely has its challenges. It has its challenges for you personally, socially. And it certainly has its challenges for your family as light as well. But I think the rewards are just greater than those challenges. The way that my wife and I looked at it was we very much wanted to have a role outside of the four walls of the classroom. We embrace having families over on a regular basis. We had three families over for our Purim Suda. On a regular Shabbos, not as much because we have a lot of bar mitzvahs, but when we're not at a bar mitzvah or a Shabbaton, we'll usually have some families over. And that's something that we enjoy doing and find a tremendous amount of satisfaction in. And then there's also, especially in the elementary school age, is bar and bat mitzvahs, which could be one to three every weekend. Depending on on when it's happening, so all of that does have an impact on your social life. The good news is that as you go into chinuch, you'll have no time for a social life, so it's not really that relevant. And I say that a little bit tongue in cheek, but it's important to point that out. I don't think any of us have emphasized that point. It's not easy. The preparation is tremendous. You really prepare for every single class that you're teaching a tremendous amount of time, but it does have the impact. But overall, it's been something that has worked for us, and you just have to make sure that both you and Mitch and one day your wife are comfortable with that path.
Yeah, when I read this question when I got up there, I wasn't exactly sure what you mean by social life. I would agree. In other words, like, if you guys think that your life as a mechanech is going to be anything like your social life now, forget about it. It's not happening. In other words, I mean, at least not that I've been able to experience for the last, 30 years or so. In other words, I don't know if you mean by social life, going to a bar bat mitzvah is part of your social life. In other words, that's your responsibility. That's our responsibility. In other words, to see it again as a projection of who we are and being a kli, a vessel for Avodat HaKodesh. In other words, this is what you've decided to take on. This is your job. And that's what you do. In other words, and being there for everybody in a pastoral, part of your career and doing what you need to do as being part of the community is what you do. I don't know in terms of whether or not social life meant that you have friends and there are friendships you've developed. One of the things you will learn as you get older is you have fewer and fewer friends, and especially with mechanech, you realize that you're really kol kulo given to your masur to your avodah, your masur to your job, and your social life is really your family, your wife, to a very great degree, and in terms of obviously having people over your house, etc. But again, that's part of what you do. In terms of friends that I might have, in terms of my own social life, my own peers, I have nobody. There's nobody who I really spend any time with. And most of the time that I ever spend time in a social, educational context is with my students and with my tzevet from Machaneh. I don't know anything outside of that, honestly.
I thought this is a very good question. I generally agree with much of Rabbi Hagel's approach and Rabbi Rothner also. The only thing I want to add is that I think what the question was probably hinting at most probably is a little foreign, honestly, from Rabbi Hagel and I are friends. We go back. I know his experience a little bit. I know my experience very well. I think that our experiences might be even a little bit Yotzei Min HaKlal in this regard. Because I think what the question was driving at is that very often the shul rabbi, the principal of the school, the kid's rebbe is the target of a lot of negative stuff in the community. A lot of times that the Shabbos afternoon table is spent discussing, this is wrong with the school and this is wrong with the shul and this is wrong with that. And this is, we live in a community that's very demanding on those issues. It's also that if you live in the community, so you're going to shopping for your wife in the store, or for the family, you're going shopping, and like somebody stops you online in the store and say, starts talking to me about, my kid didn't get a good mark on the test, and the teacher didn't mark it right. Like sometimes parents don't know boundaries that you're entitled to have your own life. Also, you're entitled to spend some time with your children. So. I think that there are a lot of people's experiences have that negative factor to them. My father was always makbid never to work in the same community as he was involved in the school. And as Rabbi Hagler said, the funny thing about that is that he was actually, when Hal was looking for a principal, like years back, when Rabbi Armin Freeman left, so they asked my father to do it. And Hal had a rule, they were demanding that the principal be in the community. And my father had a rule that he absolutely would not be in the community, and therefore there was nothing more to talk about in terms of the job. I tend to go more towards Rabbi Hagler's point. I very much enjoy living in the community that our school is there, have kids over for Shabbos all the time. I think that that's part of the whole experience of being a mechanech. But there are some negatives. I could tell you, I think this is probably more being a principal. And I don't feel anything. Thank God, I think that if you work to talk to people respectfully and you look to be an agent of Kiddush Hashem wherever you go and you have the requisite amount of humility, hopefully people aren't going to throw too many darts at you and they're not going to, and my experience in my 15 years at DRS, my 5 years in MTA for that matter, I never had that experience. I never felt negative social pressure from people. But I can tell you that maybe this is more as a principle that I often feel very lonely in the job. I do feel that way. I feel like, because even, the rabbeim, you can't really be so friendly because you're their boss. That's a little difficult. And you feel outside the community. All the parents, they may have a certain respect for you, but that's not the certain kind of social camaraderie that sometimes I think people need. So I will, allow for that and admit to that, honestly, that I do have that feeling sometimes. But I agree with Rabbi Hagler and what I wrote said that the overwhelming that might be sometimes a, you know, that comes at the territory, but certainly I think the overwhelming feeling of living in the community and being involved in the lives of families and being involved, that social dimension, I have viewed overwhelmingly as very positive. The only other very small caveat, or Rothman related to before, and I have to sit very briefly, I just want to stress it a little bit more. It's crucially important for a mechanech to set aside time for his own children, for his own family. And too many people don't do that enough. And one could argue that I don't do that enough, but I make it a very strong priority. I have a Seder with each one of my kids. I have, you know, there's vacation time. My wife says it's Yaharag Vayavar. We have to go away with the children. The family has to go away. You have to spend time, especially when you're every night out of the house and every night there's another meeting, every night another committee. So my kids only see me on Shabbos. I have rules about where I will go on Shabbos. I don't have the bar mitzvahs. Thank God I don't have to worry about that. I got the chasnas. I got other things. But you got to set aside time for your wife. You got to set aside time for your own family. And the other thing that I wanted to say about this just ran right out of my head, so I forgot it. But I think that is a crucially... Oh, and the other thing right, Rothman said was that you also have to set aside time for your own learning and your own growth, as Rothman alluded to before. I think that you get so consumed that you're not worried about your own development, your own growth as an Eved Hashem, and your own growth as an educator. You know, you're so worried, you know, doing all the preparations, and life takes up so much. Are you growing? So I think it's important to focus on your own growth. I think that will be something that will allow you to be in it for the long term and not to burn out or not to feel like I'm just always at everybody else's beck and call, but I'm not ever doing anything for myself.
Okay, we're down to the last two questions, and then we'll open up to the floor, hopefully, assuming that there's still some more time left. We'll start with Rabbi Kamenetsky and then work to Rabbi Hagelin and Rabbi Rother. What is the most important aspect of the role that a mechanic plays in the life of a, for Rabbi Kamenetsky, you're the expert here on high school, and Rabbi Hagler and Rabbi Rother, your own respective areas. What is the most important aspect that the mechanic plays, meaning what's the role of a teacher? What is his purpose?
So it's two primary ones. The primary role of mechanech is, and I don't want to sit here and argue which is more important, but there's two primary roles. It's to be a life example of inspiration, and it's to facilitate, you know, skill in Jewish text. If I had to boil it down to the two things that are the goals of what I want for a mechanech to be, I want him to be someone who will be able to be a role model of inspiration, you know, who kids will look to as an inspiring figure, not necessarily because of anything he tells them or the way he interacts, but just who he is. I think that's one goal, and the other goal is to teach skills. We, you know, a lifelong engagement with Jewish text begins, I mean, one of the school's primary goals is that the kids should walk out with a familiarity and an expertise, everybody at their own level, and be able to have the skills to study Torah. So I would say that to facilitate skills and to be an agent of inspiration, a role model of inspiration, to me, are the two most important goals.
I would add to that two words with regard to middle school, and that's self-esteem. One of the most important things that you need to be doing as a middle school teacher is making as many deposits into their bank of self-esteem as you can, appropriate, because they'll see right through it if they're phony, but appropriate deposits in their self-esteem. Middle school students are going through tremendous changes in their life, boys and especially girls, by the way, if you're interacting at all with the girls in the middle school age, physical, hormonal changes, identity changes, trying to figure out who they are. They're incredibly egocentric and concerned about everything that they do, that whatever they do is not good enough. So I think it's very important, and again, an appropriate, truthful, honest type of a way to do what you can to build them up, to give them the self-esteem, to give them the self-confidence that they should feel good about themselves. I'm not even talking about Torah and Yiddishkeit. I'm really just talking about they should feel good about who they are, and then you can get to the next step after that.
Agree with both of my colleagues. I would also stress the idea that obviously Dugma Yishit, setting that example, being that inspiration, but not only is it's important to give over skills in terms of textual skills, but also again in terms of what it means to be a member of Am Yisrael and what it means to be an active member of Am Yisrael, and that aspect of continuity, etc., is I think is vital.
When considering a job applicant, what role does that individual's hashkafa play in your decision?
To begin with, Rabbi Rothner, move on.
Are you talking about, in other words, if I'm going to be hiring somebody?
Yeah.
Yes.
Hashkafat olam, in terms of if you... Hashkafat olam plays a critical role in terms of what you're trying to do. If you have a certain belief in ideologically and religiously in terms of where you think the school, like for instance when I was the principal of a middle school, what type of teachers I want to hire, etc., and what gang I am looking for my students to emulate, I think hashkafat plays a critical role. It is not the only criteria to hire somebody or not to hire somebody, but I think there's room for diversity within a school, but not diversity that is going to necessarily break what you are trying to give over to the student.
I would certainly agree with that. I think it certainly does play a role. It's important for me that we're hiring teachers and especially Rebbeim who share the hashkafa of our school, but I do see that in a little bit of a broad term. If we can get that within a range, I think there's a it's healthy to have a little bit of diversity, to have students being exposed to. Again, when I say diversity, we're really not talking about a wide range
spectrum.
Over here, right? A wide spectrum, but within a small spectrum, I think it's a healthy thing to have within the school.
It's a very good question. Also, the one thing I would say is that more important than the person's hashkafa is what's his attitude towards that hashkafa. In other words, I could tolerate people who don't exactly share the exact hashkafa of the yeshiva if they're going to be team players and realize that they're not going to just come and always use every opportunity to trumpet their own difference and to show, well, I don't do things like that, or I'm not like that. You know, someone who at least may have a different voice. Different voices are good as long as they mold into the symphony and orchestra and tapestry of a yeshiva. It's good to have different voices. But as has been said, and even if it's somewhat of a far-out voice, as long as it's done, like say, with humility and being part of a team player and realizing that maybe you don't always have all the answers on this issue and you're not going to be looking, as Rothman said, to just always be at odds with people, but to respect the overall tone and tenor of this school. But certainly, it is important for a school to have role models who emulate the ideals that the school is trying to, who espouse the ideals that the school is trying to give over. Like, you know, for instance, again, with rare exception, just saying, you know, if we want all our kids to go to college, let's say, we want all the kids in DRS to go to college. So if we have a Rebbe who didn't go to college, it's gonna again, I'm not saying it's an absolute that we would never hire such a person, but it's gonna be much harder for that kind of person to get a job because he didn't really live the life that's being emulated, that we're looking for the kids to look to him as a role model in terms of, you know, the way he did things. So, you know, so hashkafa in that sense plays a little bit of a role.
Okay. Question about Eretz Yisrael. So a big question was emailed me today, so I didn't really edit it. It seems that the path of many modern Orthodox high schools today is to, or we'll say institutions, today is to stress the value of supporting Medinat Yisrael without necessarily stressing the value of living there. Do you think that this is true? And if so, why is that the case? Part one. Part two, How can we as mechanchim stress the value of living in Eretz Yisrael without turning kids off by making them feel like we are pushing them too hard or asking too much of them? Additionally, how do we teach this in a proper and sensitive way and overcome the fact that these kids' parents are not living in Eretz Yisrael and the teacher himself is not currently living in Eretz Yisrael? Is it possible to answer such a large question, or should I break it down?
I think we got the general idea.
You want the answer.
It's on it. I think it was originally focused for high school. I'm happy to talk about it, but it was focused on something for your expertise.
I think it's living in Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah rabba. It's not just a mitzvah like any other mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that the halacha gives a much greater significance than just Stam, another one of the 613 mitzvot. I think a high school has to promote Aliyah, to do what it can to promote Aliyah. That is definitely a challenge in an atmosphere where everyone who's promoting it is living in Chutz La'aretz. It's definitely a big challenge because kids see through any kind of hypocrisy. And if, you know, how are you going to promote living in Medina Yisrael if all the Rabbanim and all the people in the school aren't doing it? So my response to that is that anyone who asks me, I basically say to them, you know, when I'm done with this, I'm on the next plane. You know, I'm here right now feeling, you know, because this is what I think that the Rabbana Shalom wants me to do right now. But I really feel that every Jew does belong in Medina Yisrael and that we all have to work to get there. And I think that there are very few excuses for people to not be living there. I think that to be a mechanech might be one of them. Certainly my rabbanim have stressed that. Shechter talks about it all the time. You know, Soloveitchik, others expressly wrote that and spoke about that. But outside of that, I really don't see so many reasons that someone shouldn't be living there. How to communicate that is very, very difficult. We try to bring in people into the yeshiva who are living in Israel, who can talk to people about what it is like to live there. I think you do have to have sensitivities to parents. I'm very, very sensitive to parents and everything, and you can't just, you know, advocate that a person should rip himself away and against the will, that a kid should make Aliyah against the will of his parents. Generally speaking, I wouldn't be in support of that. I think that has to be a family kind of decision. And it is probably true that many yeshiva high schools don't do a great job at communicating this. And the reason primarily is what it already says in the question. That is that it's just very, very difficult to communicate something when you yourself aren't living it. Everything I've been saying, everything we've all been saying is about the best way to be mechanech is to be a role model, is to emulate it. And if you're not doing it, you could talk about it from today. If you're just talking the talk and not walking the walk, then it doesn't really mean so much to kids. But I still think that through various programs and through trying to highlight to kids the importance of living in Israel, I think it can be done. We have many of our graduates that have gone on to make Aliyah. Right, currently I have 10 graduates currently serving the Israeli Army. We had 16 to 18. Again, we've only been around 15 years. We only had 11 years of graduates, but we have a number of graduates serving the Army. We certainly are very supportive of that. We bring them back all the time and encourage kids to be involved in it. So we do our best, but the truth is that because of the question itself, it's very, very difficult.
Thanks. I would say it's a little bit easier in elementary school for a few reasons. First of all, number one, I think we definitely not only stress the value of supporting Israel, but we definitely do stress the value of living in Eretz Yisrael. That is definitely stressed in our school, and I think it can be stressed in elementary school. I think clearly over there, it's a different type of stress. We're not at all promoting Aliyah because they're 7 years old. You know, it's not something that we're promoting, but we are promoting the value of living in Israel. So how does that happen? Talking about it in terms of a value. Talking about the when families make Aliyah in the school, promoting that, valuing that, really showcasing that, and standing up and saying, "Wow, we're so proud of this family," and we all hope that one day, you know, our family will have that opportunity as well. One of the other things that we're able to do is we usually, on any given time, have somewhere between four and six shlichim that we bring in from Israel to work in the school from anywhere from 2 to 4 years. So I think they're able to give a little bit of a different message, number one, directly from them, and number two, I think the message of bringing them in sends that message to the children as well. I think, you know, where we're seeing it, you know, the question is, are we successful at all? We average about, and this has nothing to do with us, I'm not the first part, we average anywhere from 4 to 7 families a year that might make Aliyah. It's calmed down a little bit recently, maybe with the economy. The parents are doing that, nothing to do with us. But what is great is, I get from the parents all the time, is as soon as they tell the children that they're picking them up, taking them away from the home, away from their friends, and it could be 8, 9, 10, 12, 13-year-olds, the overwhelming response is that their children are incredibly happy about that and excited that they're doing this. So I think that's where we're playing a role, and hopefully a little bit of a successful role.
Mayor Roth and I have a suspicion you have an opinion on the matter.
No, I what do you want to say? I picked up my family and I left, and it was difficult to do, and trust you me, just the, you know, actually Moshe was a guinea pig, my oldest son, because I did it twice. So back and forth, back and forth. So there's no question there, and the idea of being a dugmai sheet on that level, there's no question there. I think it begs a number of questions. I think number one, I think it talks about atitim batech nisiyot, you know, batei midrashot b'chutz la'aretz lishtakeh be'eretz Yisrael, is something that you need to think about. In terms of resources that our community, and I'm talking about our community, means the community in chutz la'aretz, puts towards sustainability of communities here in chutz la'aretz versus that money which might be better spent, or that there's a national agenda in Eretz Yisrael, I think trying to achieve that balance is not an easy thing to do, and I think we need to really think about it. In other words, the schools that trump the idea of, you know, oh, this is fantastic, we built a $28 million school. No, I built a $45 million school. No, I spent $75 million on building a school here in chutz la'aretz. One has to take a step back and see, is that necessary? Is that where the money is better spent? Should we create a super fund to allow our graduates, you know, let's say $5,000 a year, to be able to help support them in Eretz Yisrael, because we really believe in Aliyah and we want to make sure to do that. I think that those are things, the question of sustainability of educational institutions in chutz la'aretz versus Eretz Yisrael is something that needs to be thought about. In terms of when I was the principal of the school, same idea, the issue of bringing shlichim and having that voice in school and that being part of it is critical. And again, making sure that you're constantly bringing them in and understand that you're upsetting the entire rubric of the school, because you have a lot of movement in and out of the school. People make friends in school, the shlichim have an impact, and all of a sudden, 3 or 4 years later, they pick up and leave. And understand that it's not an easy road to go down to bring shlichim in and out, even though it might be vital for, you know, to sustain the school. And third of all, I would say that yes, I agree with Rabbi Kamenetsky that you need to have a sensitivity to those people, but you don't need to have a sensitivity to those people. Meaning that I think part of our job, just like our job, is to nudge people in terms of Limud HaTorah and to make sure that they will be Koveya Itim LaTorah and make sure that they're going to do that. And we're that little voice inside the head of the Balabayit who says, no, I'm not going to go with my son or my daughter to learn. And we're the ones saying, no, get up and get out, and you're not going to watch L.A. Law or whatever it is. If I don't watch any TV, I don't even know what's on TV these days. But to go out and to do that, it's the same thing to say sometimes, nudge, you know. Realize, Medina Yisrael needs you. And you taking a back seat towards that is not necessarily the best way to do it. And sometimes to be that little Navi, or that little, you know, the person saying the things which people don't want to hear, is part of our job as a mechanech within that rubric. So I would say that also. Just like we're going to do it when it comes to the critical importance of Limud, it's the same thing about Medina Yisrael.
I believe L.A. Law has been off the air since the mid-90s.
Oh, okay, sorry. I didn't even know it's on.
We discussed technology a little before, and one of the ways that it's used positively is when people text me questions from the crowd. Can we talk topless, $ in chinuch? If that's on our mind, is it a bad sign? If it's if that's at the forefront of our mind, the dollar signs, is that a bad thing? What's the actual dollar amount? get a job and then move to a higher position, etc. Meaning, how does that work? Rabbi Rothman, can you speak from
I'll speak to that. Well, I'm not only going to speak to Eretz Yisrael. Okay. That, what you just said, that second part of the question, I think is critically important and an incorrect view. The idea of dollar sign and then moving up. It's the same thing I say to my madrichim. Oh, it's time to be a Rosh Eda. It's time to be a division head. No. You have yet, in other words, I've been in this job for 18 years, and I still have a lot to learn. It doesn't mean that you immediately graduate when you're a teacher. Oh, I'm ready to be an assistant principal. Whoa. Spend a lot of time in the trenches, knowing what needs to happen, okay? Knowing what that is. The one thing I want to start with is that idea of, oh, we're going to pay our dues a little bit, then we're moving up because the big money is in administration. Calm down a second. You know, let's go back. That's number one. Number two, in terms of making ends meet here in your job in Chutz Laaretz, if you're going to be a mechanech, I think it is critically important that when you are entertaining a position, my hope would be that the person who's offering the position has a board that understands living with dignity. That it's important to understand that a mechanech, there's an issue of pat b'melech tochal as part of what you are as a mechanech, on the one hand. On the other hand, when you are struggling to such a degree that you can't put food on a table and you can't live a life of dignity, that is incorrect on the part of the balabatim. It's okay for a lawyer to earn $250 an hour, but for a mechanech to be able to put food on the table, we're not necessarily concerned about that. That is immoral and unethical. Okay, and I would hope that wherever you're taking jobs, those people that are offering you those jobs understand that a mechanech needs to be treated with dignity. For heaven's sake, they are giving their body and soul to the life of Am Yisrael and Torah Yisrael, and they need to understand that they have to be paid appropriately. That's number two. Number three, the issue of making a living in Medinat Yisrael as a mechanech, I will tell you right now, is extremely difficult in the present situation. I'm not talking about those people who are going to go ahead and become, you know, all of a sudden, let's go to post-high school programs, we'll open up another 30 or 40 of them to completely, you know, flush the system with post-high school programs. And then what I'm going to do, because I feel really good, is to run to 30 programs a week, and then all of a sudden you realize, you don't even know, you get up in front of a class on Yonah, and you're teaching Baba Kama, because you're really not sure where you are at that particular moment. And the reason why that happened is because there isn't, in order to make ends meet, it's very, very difficult to do that. Realize that if you're going to work in the Israeli public school system, either in a mamlachti, stam or mamlachti, dati, torani, mamlachti, dati, it is not going to be able to live on 7,000 shekel a month. It's not. It really is not. And if there is a reason to be moser nefesh on that level, tavo aleichem bracha, but I think that on the level of Medinat Yisrael, there has to be some very serious soul searching on the part of Medinat Yisrael and the Ministry of Education to help people be able to make ends meet. And I will, one last point and then I will hand it over. And I think that it's the problem becomes in Medinat Yisrael, just for you to understand, is that you will end up having to teach two or three misrot, meaning you will have to teach in two or three misgarot, two or three schools, in order to be able to make ends meet. And that is not an easy thing to do. It really is not. And I would hope that you'd be able to find a school that understands that and is able to pay you appropriately, but it is a difficult situation. And that's all I can say. It's not an easy situation. In Chutz Laaretz, on the other hand, I think at the end of the day, it's a lot easier to be a mechanech in terms of the system than it is in Medinat Yisrael.
I mean, the economics are very, 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 very difficult. I don't just mean in terms of the salary and being able to live. Now, especially in the economic crisis that we're in, you know, it is true that we have to treat our, and the boards have to treat the mechanchim with the right kavod. But part of it is the finances have to be there. Parents are struggling terribly to afford tuition. In most schools, 85% of the school's budget is going to pay teacher salaries and benefits. 85% is going directly to the people that work in the schools. And that money has to come from somewhere. There's limited amount of fundraising you could do. Giving to schools is not, it's not sexy, you know, nobody wants to do that. It's just not, you know, it's like, how do you advertise it? It's not children with Nebuchadnezzar with cancer or something like that. It's not something that pulls, you know, you have to have a direct relationship to it. If I have a child in the school, maybe if I have a grandchild in the school, I'm a graduate or something. I have to have a, you know, in school, so you really have to, at most, you're going to get 2 degrees of separation and get somebody to donate. So there's a real problem that there are limited funds that are there. I think to answer the direct question that was asked, I don't think so. I don't think that if you're a little bit concerned about your, you know, parnasa, that means you shouldn't. That's an automatic don't go into chinuch. I don't think so. I think it's a fair concern. I think it is. You still have to live, and you're entitled to live. I would just say one thing. You know, to give you one little tip. We're all, and I'm sure Rabbi Kamenetz goes the same budget cycles that I go through and the budget meetings that we have. We're all struggling to give, you know, the most to everybody. You want to extend that a little bit. Just be a lights out teacher. Ultimately, you're going to put yourself in the driver's seat. Okay, we all, the better schools, I think the larger schools, the better schools, somewhere have a little bit of wiggle room when it comes to the literally, you know, the outstanding teachers, the ones that are having ashpa and changing kids' lives. So, you know, that's the best advice that I could do is to give you is be great and then put yourself in the driver's seat. I could speak for myself, but I think other people would agree. I'm not losing my top teachers. I'm just not losing them. I'm going to figure out how to keep them.
All I want to add is I think that the financial landscape, so obviously the recession that we were in for the last 2-3 years has thrown a monkey wrench into it, but I think that, let's say, 5, 6, 7 years ago, so the financial landscape for educators is much, much better than it was 30 and 40 years ago. You can't even compare. So the chances of, you know, making a decent living, even if you're not the lights-out educator that Rabbi Hagler spoke about, is much better. It's generally speaking, I'm not just speaking about, you know, our school, we're in the five towns, so, you know, we have plenty of money for everybody all the time. But I'm not just speaking about that. I know pretty much what's going on in a lot of schools. So I think that overall, the kavod that Rothman was talking about, it's much better than it was 30 years ago. There's no question about that. Having said that, the other piece that I would say, in addition to being, if you're a lights out teacher, then you're right. Then you could probably, you know, you could probably go to your principal, you know, every few years and say, listen, I can't make ends meet. I'm having my rent, my this, my, you know, I'm not going on any vacations. You know, what can you do? Tell the Baal Batim, look, I got to go take my talents to South Beach or something. I got to do something else. You know, if you're not gonna, you know, play me or trade me. The other thing that many mechanchim do is they also have something else on the side. Almost every Rebbe in DRS has some other side thing going on. That's a high school thing. You know, we sort of end them at 2. We have limud kesher in the morning, so they sort of end at 2:15. A lot of times I find other things for them to do in the school. I'll find one of the Rebbe's is also the athletic director. He does all the dealings with all the sports stuff. One of the other Rebbe's has a degree in social work, and he does guidance in the afternoon. He's an excellent school psychologist. He runs all the guidance programs in the afternoon. So one of the Rebbe's is a youth director on Shabbos. One of the Rebbe's is a shul rabbi on the side of a small shul, not like a major shul that takes all of his time. A small shul, he has a small job on the side. So one of the Rebbe's teaches computers in the afternoon. One of the Rebbe's teaches American history. So you can, there are things you can do to supplement, and actually there are a lot of Rebbe's, you know, that are making really very, very decent full-time salaries because they're working both in the morning and in the afternoon, or they're working in the morning and on the weekend, and they can put things together and it can be doable. Again, is it going to be, you know, the lap of luxury? Are you going to never have worries about, you know, when big expenses come and they always come, there's always some expense. When you're married, there's always something to do. If you're lucky enough to have a house, there's always something that needs to be fixed. There's always something that, you know, is it always the plumber you need or the insurance? There's so many expenses to live, but I do think that, you know, with a good attitude, as Rabbi Rothman said, with the appropriate, you know, humility, don't have such high expectations, and willing to hustle a little bit. I think you're right. In Israel, you have to hustle a ton. In America, you have to hustle also, maybe not quite the same kind of situation that was described there. You have to hustle a little bit, but I really think it's eminently doable financially, and the good news is, it's much, much better than it was 30, 40 years ago. You listen to my father talk about what he had to do, talk about budgets of tuition of 30 and 40 years ago. It was a whole different world. You were talking, paying teachers, you know, $15,000, $18,000, $20,000. You know, it was a whole different story, even though that money meant a little bit more then. But It was really, teachers were really on the bottom end. I think that there has been a haramas keren of education in general. I think a lot of places have done that, so I think the situation is better than it was.
It's late. If anyone wants to say after, we'll take other questions if the panelists are willing to say. But otherwise, I think Rabbi Kamenetsky at one point said, "I have a lot more to say, but I'll stop here." And I think that that's I think that everyone probably feels that way. We hope that this at least was. Well, I'm sure it was very informative. I hope it was informative enough in the small time that we had, and hopefully it'll whet your appetite to find out more. If anyone wants to contact the panelists or ask any other questions, you can email me at tlm@yu.edu, and I will put you in touch. Thank you again so much, everyone, for coming, and thank you, Rabbi Kamenetsky, Rabbi Hagler, and Rabbi Rother.
Hello, Mari.
Good. Pleasure. Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you.